What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Like, Cell is a worse movie.
Yeah.
Cell is unwatchable.
Well, Cell, I don't know if you read Cell the book, but that
I did read Cell the
also
book, and it's
unreadable.
Also very bad.
Yeah.
It's funny that was one of the, I wrote this in my write-up, but I was like, it's one of those things where, like, phoners sounds dumb in a book, mm-hmm. but hearing people say it out loud is actually worse.
Did you know there are other worlds than these, where they all float or get a bad disease? Let's all go to Castle Rock. We can hitch a ride with Christine, and you will find the Dairy Connection, and we can party like it's 6/1999.
Hey, what's up? It's Maya. I'm back for another episode where I bore you by talking about Stephen King for a very long time. I'm joined today with Lewis, who is a new friend of mine, who you may have seen his name going around because he recently wrote a BuzzFeed article where he ranked every single Stephen King movie.
I did. It was a terrible idea.
And what else do you do? So I know you as sort of a generally funny guy on the internet.
Thank you. I am the deputy arts and entertainment editor. So I do like a lot of editing and managing. And then I write about theater and film and TV.
It seems like you get to go and see a lot of theater.
I see a lot of theater. Yeah, this is like the crazy time of year for me.
Yeah. Did you see Misery on Broadway?
I did see Misery on Broadway.
What did you think?
It was hot garbage.
I know,
so I had a great time. I had a great time. It was so bad, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, Laurie Metcalf was great.
She was very good. Bruce Willis was an odd choice.
I mean, if he'd like learned his lines, it would have been fine. But yeah. He had like an earpiece and he still fucked it up. And it yeah. was kind of impressive.
Yeah, it was really bad. My worst like criticism of that whole show is that, and I've talked about this on this podcast before, but everyone in the audience seemed to think that it was a comedy. Annie would come in and like say something horrifying and everyone in the audience would laugh at it. So right. It was like the whole thing.
Well, I think that Laurie Metcalf reads funny to people because she was on the sitcom.
But it's like, come on. It ruined the whole
Misery is funny. You know, it's like a dark comedy
like
in a lot of ways.
Over
but,
the top.
But I mean, I think people just hear everything she says like as a laugh line. Because Doll's House Part 2, which she was in, was like not a comedy.
And
I guess it was a comedy, but it was like not, there were a lot of things in there that were not like funny, laugh out loud funny. And every line she gave was kind of treated as like a joke.
Yeah.
That was more of a comedy. And then Three Tall Women is like not a comedy, but again, there's humor in it. And I think a lot of it, just her line readings, people took to be funny.
Yeah. But Bruce Willis, unfortunately, was not funny.
Bruce Willis was not funny or good. No,
yeah.
No.
Also, there were a bunch of people after the show waiting to just sort of like wave at him or whatever. And I don't blame him, but he did the thing where he just like pulled his hat down and walked by everybody. And I was just like, come on.
I understand not stage dooring, but if you're going to walk out that way, you should probably say hi.
Right.
Otherwise,
just wave
find another
and walk away.
Exit.
Right.
Because there are other
thing.
Ways out of the theater.
Right. So that was my experience with Stephen King on Broadway.
On Broadway, yeah.
Does he have other Broadway shows that I'm not thinking
wrote,
of?
No, but he wrote a musical.
Which one?
And I can't remember anything. He did write, co-wrote a musical. I can't remember anything about it. It has not been produced here, I don't think. But he definitely wrote one.
Ghost Brothers of Darkland County?
Yes.
That sounds awesome.
It doesn't?
And it's by John Mellencamp
and Stephen
King.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
so cool.
Yeah, I couldn't remember who the other guy was. Like some rock guy that straight men like.
That's amazing. Great. And what the hell made you want to watch every Stephen King movie? Where did this
it was
from?
Like definitely more of a compulsion than a desire.
Yeah.
I grew up watching those movies and reading Stephen King, and I'm just like a completist, and I wanted to like find an excuse to do it to watch them all. And
so have you been thinking about it for a long time?
Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of like big rankings, and I love the challenge and the masochism of like taking on a ranking like that.
Totally.
And so I just kind of like put it off for as long as I could. And I was like, I think I have the time now. I'm going to like try to do this. And I thought that it would take me like months to watch them all. Because a lot of them are really long. A lot of them are like miniseries.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. And then I watched everything in 6 weeks. Which
Shut
was
up.
Like excessive.
That's
it was
amazing.
A problem.
So
I didn't
did
do
you,
anything else.
Yeah. Did you like not go to work? You just.
I went to work. I watched a little bit at work, but I mostly like did my job at work.
Yeah.
And then I just came home and watched everything. And it was
That's
like
amazing.
A dry, it was like early summer. So there wasn't a lot of theater happening. Yeah, I had a lot of time to watch Stephen King.
And did you, like, the ones that you had already seen, did you rewatch them?
I rewatched everything.
Okay, yeah, so yeah. So we are talking a compulsion here.
Yeah, no, it was a problem.
It's really, so one of the big reasons I wanted to have you on here is people are always asking me about Stephen King movies, and I am super not into the movies. Yeah. Like, I am a book completist, so I think I've read like 80% of his books, still trying to get through
That's
all of them.
That's still very impressive.
It's ridiculous. He's written, last time I checked, because he writes a new one like every week, but it was like, I think he's written 76, and I've read like 60 of them or something.
That's plenty.
That's so many books to read by one person.
Well, because I mean, I did a story on him. I did like an interview with him.
Yeah.
And it was pegged to what's it called? The Outsider, the second most recent book.
Yeah.
And then I felt like I had just finished it, and I had mm-hmm. it had been a little bit of time, but it hadn't been that long. And the next book came in the mail, and I was like, "What is happening? Like, how is this possible?"
It's ridiculous. I have a website where, like, so my whole thing is like I track the connections across Stephen King books, and so I have a website where I track all those connections. And literally, like, he comes out with books so quickly that my website is always out of date, and I'm like, "How are you writing an entire book faster than I can update like one thing in a database?"
Right.
It's crazy.
Well, I love that though. That's always been like, I think that because I've never been like a superhero person, so but the, like, the kind of like universe thing of the books is like really cool to me, and that's always been like a big selling point, is like you kind of rewarded by like binging these.
That's my
these
thing
books.
Too, right?
The movies don't really work that way, right. But there are like, you know, there are cool connections if you know enough about the world of Stephen King to get it. And I've always like dreamt of a Stephen King movie universe, but that will probably never happen because The Dark Tower was so bad.
I know.
But like, you know, you never know. I mean, Castle Rock was kind of like that weird fanficky.
It tried to be. So I did an episode about Castle Rock, so I won't go too deep into this. But my gripe with Castle Rock is, I don't know if you know that, you probably know this, but it originally wasn't intended to be an actual Stephen King show. They didn't have the rights to it.
Right.
And then they, after they had written the whole show, got the rights to the Stephen King stuff. And so I feel like they just shoved all this stuff in there.
Right.
And I'm supposed to just be like, oh, it's Cujo. Like, it just, it's not the clever way that Stephen King does
it. No. It was a lot. I did like the show. I didn't like the last episode.
Yeah.
I thought the reveal in then episode 9 was really cool. Not to like be too much about Castle Rock because you have to cover that. But then I was like, in episode 10, I was a little bit confused as to where we were going with this.
Yeah.
But I did think that the details they included, I had like a running post on BuzzFeed that I updated every week with all the connections. I thought they were like at least like cool nerdy details. Like they were character names that like you don't know unless you like have read the body like 1,000 times or, you know, have Google. You can also figure it out. But like there were like really, you know, small details. And then at the same time, there were like the constant references to, right. That's a little bit less subtle.
Yeah.
Or like Cujo is mentioned a lot. And I'm like, realistically, a rabid dog is not going to register in this town. Like a lot of bad shit's happened in Castle Rock. And we're going to talk about Cujo and not like the time the devil came to town and like made everyone kill each other.
Right.
Like, that seems way more pressing.
Well, and it's like the reason they do that is because everyone has read Cujo or at least heard of it.
Or knows Cujo, right.
Right. And so it's like they have to, I feel like, I think that show was trying to get people who aren't super fans into the whole concept the Stephen King multiverse. But it just, I feel like I had the same problem with The Dark Tower, where it was like, if you're not a Stephen King fan, it's going to make no sense to you. It'd be so boring. And if you are one, you're going to be like,
incredibly frustrating because
so
it's like
stupid.
It doesn't make that was awful.
It was so
but
bad.
I think that, I mean,
Castle Rock was better than Dark Tower.
Castle Rock was definitely better than Dark Tower. I did not include it on my list because I only did direct adaptations, and also because Castle Rock is a series, so it's going to have another season,
right?
Which they said was an anthology, but they set it up like they're going to do like a Jackie Torrance season,
right? Well, that's what I heard, is that the rumors are that it's going to be about the Overlook, and so Jackie will be there. I don't know.
The Overlook blew up.
Well, it did in that universe, but they're doing like a slightly different.
Well, so the thing that I kept noticing that was really cool. So in the opening credits, it's like really, this is like really nerdy, but you would appreciate it.
Yeah.
They have that, they have the number 217 crossed out.
Yeah.
And 237 is written under it.
Oh, that's so good.
And there was this whole thing where like they repeatedly use the movie, like it's all references to the movie The Shining and not the book. And so it felt very deliberate to me. Like they knew they were referencing the movie The Shining.
Right.
Which I appreciate because I mean, there was no axe in the book.
Right.
So that's like not a, and they kept talking about the axes.
Yeah.
So I guess they could, it's about, Castle Rock will be about the movie The Shining.
Yeah.
But they can't, I mean, what's the point of doing a season about The Shining if you don't have, like, Jack Nicholson?
Right. Well, right.
If you're doing about
the
movie The Shining, it's like, you know.
Right.
I guess they can get Stephen Weber.
Yeah, that's my thing is, like, whatever. I think I'm glad that it's happening.
Right.
I feel like there's a bunch of new Stephen King fans out there because of it. I'm enjoying that. You know, it is what it is.
I mean, I think that's true of the movies. We're getting all these new movies, too.
I know.
And
it's the Stephen King connoissance.
It is, though. I mean, and I when I interviewed him, I was asking him about that because I think that it's like kind of twofold. I think that part of it is that he's become this like Twitter personality, and that draws a lot of people to know who he is, even though he says a lot of dumb shit on Twitter. And then I think also it's just that there are these like good movies being made, and it had been so long
since a real good one.
And in watching all of them, I realized there are so few good ones.
I know.
Like on my list, I think when you get to like maybe 20, then it's like, that's pretty good. But even then, they're really like, there are more things that I enjoy than things that I think are like admirable.
Totally.
Like, I think my number 20 was like the Carrie remake, the most recent Carrie remake, which is like fun, but also like a mess. And I really, like the top 10 are like good movies. Right. Everything else is kind of like...
Yeah, I remember when I was going through your list, which we'll link to in the show notes, but I was curious because I've sort of done an analysis before on like just based on Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb ratings of like how many really are bad.
Right.
Because everyone's understanding of Stephen King movies that they're all terrible and unwatchable, and right. I wanted to disprove that. I was unable to because really the majority of them are
bad. Yeah, and I think that like, I mean, there are some that like were not that well received that I think are actually really good. Like The Mist, I think, is great, and I think that it's not, you know, people don't love that movie.
Yeah.
And there are ones like Gerald's Game, which I really like, which kind of people didn't really see it, or you know, it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
1922 is the same way. Like also stories that are not as popular. So I think that like there are some gems hidden in there.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of like really shitty ones, and part of it's just that like, I mean, the bar was set so high at the beginning, right?
Because
the first two are Carrie and The Shining.
Yeah.
Which are classic films.
Right. And like everyone's favorite.
And then it was just like a lot of garbage for a long time. And a lot of TV, a lot of miniseries. Like Salem's Lot was the first miniseries. And watching it again is like it's a slog.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
Well, and why do you think so many of his books and stories get made into movies, even the ones that clearly shouldn't have been?
Well, I mean, I think it originally started out is that like he said this, like he has a very cinematic view of things. Mm-hmm. And like he writes in a cinematic way. Like he grew up on movies. He writes as if he's like writing a movie in some ways. And so with his first novel, like Carrie was already cinematic. It makes sense that Carrie would be adapted over and over again. Oh, there's a Carrie musical, of course. Carrie musical.
Right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So there's that. Are there any other Stephen King shows on that have been on Broadway? I have no idea.
I'm sure there's like hundreds. There are definitely
adaptations of like that people do like regionally or whatever that they try. Cause it's like, I know he has like weird, you can get the rights to certain things pretty easily.
Right.
For
there's
Stephen
like
King.
The Dollar Baby.
Right. That's why they make those short films. But I feel like there's probably a theatrical version of that. But yeah, I mean, Carrie's been adapted so much, I think, because like he wrote that novel, and when you read it, you like see it.
Right.
And that's why, you know, that kind of gets adapted so much. And then I think now you kind of run out of books. And so a lot of the ones that should not be adapted are adapted.
Right.
I found a lot of the really, really bad movies are short stories that should like never have been stretched out to feature length.
And probably because people were like, Stephen King movies do well, we need a Stephen King hit. And they just picked a random story.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's really, I mean, it's random. There's some exceptions.
Well, like The Body is a great example. Like that's Stand By Me, which is one of the greatest Stephen King adaptations ever.
Right. But I think that works because it's just like about, I mean, you have a really good director and a really good writer.
Yeah.
Finding a way to make these kids interesting. So nothing really happens. That's like the whole point is they just like go on this journey and they're like, never mind. but it works really well because of like those actors and like the chemistry between them and, you know, what they, you know, the whole vibe. Like it's super sentimental, but it really works for me.
Whereas if you have a super low budget and a shitty director.
Right. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
And I think it's always also really tricky because his books are so long and there's so much detail in them.
Yeah.
That it's a question of how much to include. And they're often like either overstuffed or with Dark Tower, like
really complicated.
Well, I mean, The Dark Tower is a baffling choice because you could have just done The Gunslinger, right? You could have just done...
But The Gunslinger... Here's my thing. The Gunslinger is very boring. I love The Dark Tower. That book, I tried to read it multiple times before I could get through the whole thing. And then I only did it because I was like, I really want to read the rest of the series.
Totally.
A Gunslinger movie, maybe they could have found a way to make it interesting. Maybe.
Right.
But like, I think what they should have done is they should have done Drawing of the Three. They should have had The Gunslinger be like a 10-minute opening to the beginning just to give you context. Drawing of the Three is such a good story, and it's got like, you know, all these different, it's like a multi-generational epic story with all these great characters and all this like surprising stuff happens, and then that would set the tone for the whole Dark Tower universe.
I mean, that was just it's such a misfire.
Terrible.
It was actually hard ranking it because I tried to view everything objectively, and I haven't read all the books, right?
So when you say objectively, do you mean like you're trying to come in pretending that you're a person who like hasn't seen the others or doesn't know anything about Stephen King?
It's complicated because like obviously it's my opinion, like, bottom line, but I really wanted it to be like not just like like The Dark Tower is the most personally offensive to me.
Right.
So like The Langoliers is dumb, but I don't have any attachment to the Langoliers story. So like, or novella. So I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's not a great miniseries, but it's like dumb and fun. And
right.
I don't care about The Langoliers.
Right.
But like The Dark Tower is like, that's like my Stephen King. And so when I see a bad version of that, I want to be like, worst movie on the list.
Right.
Even though like, it's not the worst of the movies. It's just really bad.
Yeah.
Like Cell is a worse movie.
Yeah.
Cell is unwatchable.
Well, Cell, I don't know if you read Cell the book, but that
I did read Cell the
also
book.
And it's
also very bad.
Yeah.
It's funny that was one of the, I wrote this in my write-up, but I was like, it's one of those things where like phoners sounds dumb in a book,
mm-hmm.
but hearing people say it out loud is actually worse.
Right. So this is my thing about Stephen King movie adaptations is it's interesting that like you and he both think that he talk about it like he writes in a cinematic way. I agree that he writes it like he's watching a movie, but I also think that he writes so many things that would be impossible to turn into a movie. Like when you think about Tommyknockers or Dreamcatcher.
Tommyknockers is like, right.
Right. A lot of the stuff that happens in Dark Tower, it's like the whole time I was reading Dark Tower, I was like, I would love to see this movie, but like this would never work.
It would never work. It would never work. I mean, I Tommyknockers is getting remade, so that's happening,
yeah.
which is crazy to me because it is like very bizarre that, that would even you'd even try.
I mean, I will watch that. I liked Tommyknockers, the book. I know everyone else hates it, including Stephen King, but
right.
I liked it.
I've never read it.
It's weird.
I mean, Dreamcatcher, the movie, I think is not as bad as people say it is, but
it's just ridiculous.
It's so silly.
Right.
And it has like my least favorite Stephen King trope, which is like the person with special needs who's like secretly has powers, which is like, it's in so much of his, like when you, and the other thing about watching the movies is like, you see these like patterns, right?
Yeah.
Like if you've read all the books, you get them too, but like, it reminds you like, oh, every tyrant, like it's all writers. They're all writers.
Yep.
They're mostly men. And then there's going to be like some sort of like, someone with a disability who's like has magic
a
powers
secret,
or whatever. They're deaf
also,
or they have, you know, mental disability.
So I have a whole list on my website of all of these things, and it's all of those things. There's also often people's spouses dying. There's roses are a big theme. Obviously the number 19,
right.
But there's also there's another good one. But there's so many. Oh, I started noticing that he uses the word insouciant in like every single
I like
possible
that.
case. I love it.
Right.
But it's like once you read it in like the eighth book, you're like, okay, I feel like there's maybe a better word for that. But it's funny that you have picked that up from the movies because I haven't seen enough movies to see that. But like when I read the books, I'm like, there's that thing, there's that thing. There's another something about like the way he describes denim. He says the same way in every book.
That's really
like there's
funny.
A whole list of them. Yeah.
It was really it was cool. I mean, it's like there are definitely patterns I picked up on just reading them, but it had been a while since I hadn't kept up with those books. I think the last one I had read before The Outsider was like, I don't even remember. You know, it had been like I remember reading Under the Dome and then I dropped off for a long time.
Yeah.
I hadn't read the Mr. Mercedes books.
I don't like them.
I like that show, actually. The
really?
TV show.
I haven't watched that.
Season 2 is weird because, like, the books became... You read all the books?
Yeah, I read 2 of the 3.
So you know how, like, it goes from detective story to, like, supernatural?
Yeah.
So to have a show do that is really strange because now season 2 is all about, like, Brady trapped inside his own mind.
Yeah.
And it's very weird to watch. But still kind of fun.
Yeah.
I had a point somewhere here. Yeah.
His books.
Right. So that I dropped off. So watching them all again, you, like, notice these patterns even more.
Yeah.
And... there are like the obvious ones, like they're literally all in Maine, but I think things like these kind of regressive, like old fashioned characters that shouldn't exist that he keeps bringing back. Like, I'm like, yeah, that's not a great look.
And
also especially bad on screen because you could read that and be like, this is probably like not great. But seeing it, you're like, oh, this is not great.
No, totally. And what? So how many books have you read of his?
Oh, God.
A lot, a few, half of them.
Probably more like at this point, like a third,
okay.
if that. I mean,
that's a lot,
Yeah, or maybe even a quarter. There's a lot that I've missed. I didn't, you know, I started reading them when I was like probably 11 or 12. And I definitely had that period when I was like in middle school where I would read all of them.
Yeah, same.
I remember like, you know, I remember when I read It for the first time and I remember reading, The Shining. I remember reading Pet Sematary, which... freaked me the fuck out.
Pet Sematary is the worst one.
So scary. I couldn't watch the movie. Watching it this time was the first time I'd seen the movie all the way through because I turned it off when I rented it when I was like 13 because it was too scary. So I definitely read them. I just haven't kept up with them. And there's also like a huge chunk of like a lot of his books in the 80s. I just like didn't, there's periods I didn't read the books I just didn't read because they were, I don't know, Gerald's Game, Tommyknockers, things that I just never felt like I had to pick up.
Well, and there's that whole decade where Stephen King himself is sort of like, don't bother with those books.
Right,
like,
there was a lot of cocaine.
Yeah.
I do remember like when Dreamcatcher came out and I was really excited to like read a new Stephen King.
Yeah.
And I remember like thinking that it was like I kind of enjoyed it. And then I was like, maybe this is not good, like, right. later. But I think I also was just like, oh, it's dairy. Like, that's right. That's cool.
That's the thing, is like, even the worst Stephen King book. So I recently reread Christine, which is like, just a, I don't know if you've read the book.
I haven't
like,
read the book, but I love the movie.
It's great. But like, the book is a disaster for so many reasons. Like, there's literally the sort of like thing that everyone likes to make fun of is he switches, like the first third of the book is narrated in the first person, and then he suddenly just switches because the guy who was the narrator just like goes into the hospital for 6 months, and when someone asked him about it later, he was like, yeah, I just didn't really plan ahead and I didn't know what's like, the structure is all weird and like it's very boring, it's like 800 pages long and nothing happens. But like, even reading Christine, which is one of his, you know, like clearly badly written books, it's still so fun to read. Like, it's such a right. page turner. You care so much. And I'm reading a book right now that's by, I think it's like Dan Simmons, and he's allegedly like a Stephen King-esque horror writer. And it really reads like somebody read Stephen King and was like, this is easy, I can do this too. And it's like, you see what it's like when it's missing the heart and the detail that he puts right. into it. Because you can't just write like a scary story and have it matter to anybody. It's right. really hard to do.
There's so many like weird like Stephen King isms that like, you know, and they're like, that I remember when I first noticed them, and I'm like, I don't know. And you can like make up rules, apparently. Like,
totally.
He just makes up rules and like it works.
Yeah.
Like all that weird shit in It, where you're reading it and you're like, this is just strange. But it was yeah. so cool to me when I was like a kid who should not have been reading It.
Yeah.
Because that book is not for kids.
It super is not.
And like, I, you know, I almost wish that I hadn't. But I think it's good that I read that when I was like 12. I think it was like important.
Yeah, it's a pretty good like sort of coming of age story. And what, so I'm curious, when you talked to, when you interviewed Stephen King,
yeah.
you told him that the project you were doing was watching every movie.
No,
this was unrelated.
This was unrelated. Okay. Yeah, no, I had this weird period where I was like only doing Stephen King stories. And it wasn't like, I think I had been prepping for the interview, and that might have been what set me off to do the movie ranking.
Yeah.
But I had pitched an interview with him like a year before. It was when Sleeping Beauties came out, mm-hmm. the book that he wrote, Hope with the Sun.
Yeah.
One of the Sun, not Joe Hill.
Owen,
the other one. Sorry, Owen.
The not Joe Hill one.
Owen
is a super fan of the podcast, so he's going to hear that.
Is he really?
No, I'm lying.
Oh my gosh. I got really scared. I'm sure he's great. Basically, I pitched this interview and I was like, people don't write Stephen King profiles because he doesn't give a lot of access. He hates doing press.
Right.
And so I was like, I'd love to do a real story on him. I think he's emerged as like a really fascinating figure post-Trump election. Yeah. And I think his books capture something about American culture.
Totally.
That you could really explore with him. And they were like, great. He'll do press with this, with Owen. So if you want to talk to him, talk to Owen too.
Yeah.
And I was like, happy to talk to Owen for like quotes about his father, but like, I don't want it like.
Right. It's not about
the book. It's not about the book.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, we'll check back in when his next novel comes out.
Yeah.
So I like waited. And then when The Outsider was coming out, I was like, hey, can we do this now? And I really wanted to go to Maine and like do it there and like spend time with him. But he just doesn't do that. Like he did one with Rolling Stone like a decade ago. He doesn't like doing press. And, you know, I have interviewed him twice now because I interviewed him about Under the Dome, weirdly enough. But it was a phone interview he was doing. And he's like super chatty and nice, and like it's not, you know, he was never, this time a little less so, which I can go into, but it's not like I feel like he's not hostile, because I've interviewed people who like hate press.
Right.
I interviewed John Carpenter on the set of Halloween, the new Halloween, obviously, because I'm not that old, but and he's grumpy and like doesn't like doing press, clearly, right? But Stephen King just, I think, doesn't like feel like he has much more to say in terms of that. And I think the tough thing for me this time was that, like, I really wanted to get into, like, the politics that runs throughout some of his books.
Yeah.
And he just wasn't having it. He really doesn't feel like his books are political at all.
I see.
And I, to me, like, I think that, like, he is so good at capturing this sort of, like, undercurrent of, like, tension and hatred in society.
Yeah.
And, like, all these idyllic small towns. All he ever writes about is, like, these small towns that seem really nice on the outside, but there is horrible shit happening. And everyone just kind of ignores it. Like, that is so central to him.
Is The Outsider the most recent one he did, or is there one since then? Is that the newest one?
He did a Castle Rock one that I have not read that came out after The Outsider.
So one of those two, I thought that it was specifically pitched as, like, this is his political, like, statement about what's going on.
Well, The Outsider is the one about... See, my thing was, like, it's kind of this whole thing where, like, the book is like, what if the truth... What if you think you know what the truth is, but it's the truth
right,
is not...
Right, right, that's what it... Right. And that's, like, clearly related
but
to what...
But he was like, no. He was like, it's a stretch. Because someone had done a review, I think it was AV Club did a review, where they were like, The Outsider is, like, it for the Trump era.
Right.
Which is admittedly a bit of a stretch, but there are certainly elements of it that felt like it to me. And I understand where they were coming from. And he was like, no way, that's a stretch. And I don't know if he doesn't see it or doesn't want to alienate people beyond his tweets, but he's very political. I mean, he tweets about Susan Collins all the time.
Right.
Like, and gun control constantly.
All he tweets about now is politics.
Right. So to me, it was like very much fair game. And I think that, you know, I understand his sort of perspective that like the books are the books and my politics are my politics. But as he acknowledged, you can't ever really divorce your like your political leanings, especially in an era like this where we're so hypercharged about politics. You can't not have that infuse like your books in some way.
Right.
And The Outsider has lots of references to like Trump and stuff like that. So whether or not he sees it,
that's really interesting. I wonder if it's because he's getting a lot of like just like bullshit from people about being so political.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think though that like he also is like fundamentally a storyteller and he doesn't like the fact that people are projecting a meaning onto his work that he doesn't see that
it all of his books and stories, it's like all of them have such direct ties to like actual things in the world or to his life.
Course,
like that really surprises me because I feel like he, for every single story that he has, it's like there's an interview with somebody or, you know, the book jacket or whatever it is where he's like, this was based on like my mom's death or this was based on my accident or this was based on my marriage. Like it's weird that he wouldn't embrace the like political inspiration.
Right. I think that's a little, I think that the difference there is like drawing from yourself versus drawing from like
the world
at large.
Right.
But I mean, I wrote the piece I wrote. He never responded to it, which is fine.
Yeah.
I don't know if he read it. I don't think he would have liked it.
Okay.
I still love Stephen King.
Yeah.
And
did you like talking to him? Like, was it?
Yeah. I mean, it was harrowing. Like, it was, you know, it's like he's one of those people that like he's someone I grew up with. Like, he's an icon.
Yeah.
You know, to me and just in general, he is like he's a cultural icon. And so I felt tremendous pressure.
Yeah.
I prepared more questions than I ever like have for an interview.
Yeah.
Like, I really had a lot of questions. And I had because I got a full hour with him. And that was the compromise when they wouldn't let me go to Maine. They were like, we will give you the only sit down like print interview he's doing.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And we'll give you a full hour. And I was like, I will take it.
Yeah.
We ended up talking for 45 minutes because it was scheduling shit, which always happens. But still, like, that's a long time to sit with someone who doesn't love all your questions.
Right.
So it was definitely nerve-wracking. But like I wanted him to like, I wanted to change his mind about press, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to be like, let me talk to you about your books. Like, let me show you that I care deeply about all of this.
Right.
And we got there at times, but I think also he was like, you're a nut, which is fine.
I'm honestly, so this is my biggest fear is like, I really, my only goal in life is to meet Stephen King and tell him how important he's been to me. And I know that he would not give a shit because he hears this from so many people all the time.
Right.
And I like, so I've never talked to him. I was in the same room as him one time because I went to a reading that he did. And he wasn't like talking to people, so I didn't get to say hi. But like just being in the same room as him was so weird and emotional for me that I was like, it's probably a good thing that I didn't get to talk to him because I feel like he would just be annoyed. I'm sure in your job, like you probably meet a lot of famous people.
Yeah.
And it's like there is nothing that you can say to them that they haven't heard before or that is going to make them care about you, which sucks because I feel like Stephen King is one of those people that like means so much to so many people.
My thing is always like go for a really specific compliment. Like go for like, you know, talk about the book that like no one talks about.
Right.
And talk about why Batman's something.
But don't you think he can see through that? Like if I'm like, Tommyknockers was great, he'll be like, no, it wasn't. You know, like.
I think he'd appreciate that though more than like.
I love you.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he does get that all the time.
Yeah.
And he's also one of those people who's like shockingly successful in a way like none of us can comprehend. But
yeah.
is so like grounded and like tries really hard to like not be a famous person.
Yeah.
Like he is. He's made so much money. So much money.
Like a ridiculous amount.
Like an absurd amount of money. And he lives a normal life.
Right. When you hear him talk about it, it's like, it doesn't even seem like, he seems like he doesn't understand why he's made so much money from this stuff.
Right.
Because he just sits down and writes these ideas that he has and it like flows out of him and whatever. Have you ever been to Maine? Did you ever?
Yeah. So that was the crazy thing is like, so during all of this, I was like, I'd always wanted to go to Maine. Like because of Stephen King, basically.
Yeah.
And I ended up going in the middle of watching these movies. I went to Maine for a week.
That's awesome.
And so that was really cool because I went out during the day and like did Maine stuff. But at night, like I was kind of not in the middle of nowhere. I was like in Ogunquit, but I was a little bit removed from like the Maine stretch. And so I was like watching, you know, The Stand like in Ogunquit, which is where, you know, part of it starts.
Yeah.
With I can't remember Molly Ringwald's character's name because I've never actually read The Stand. But
Franny?
That sounds right.
I assume she's the cute girl in it.
Yeah, yeah. And she,
I've read the book but not seen the movie, so.
Yeah, yeah. The character who's reduced to, like, getting pregnant at the end.
Yes,
Franny, yeah. That book is, and movie, like, not great for women or disability at all.
But really good.
I'm sure the book is great. The movie, like, I was like, this is, like, rough. There was a lot more rape than I expected. And it was just, like, really, the female characters were really bad. Yeah. And then it has, like, the worst Deus Ex Machina that I've, like, ever seen with the literally God's
literal
hand
fist coming down.
Coming down. And, like, outside of, like, Needful Things, like, that's probably one of his worst endings.
Yeah. And his endings in general are not great.
There are plenty to choose from. Yeah. Their endings are, yes. I mean, it's kind of like, whenever I read a Stephen King ending that I, like, kind of like, I'm like, okay.
Yeah. That was okay. Yeah.
But there's so much buildup in his books. I mean, Needful Things was the one that really bothered me because that book is all about building up to this, like, insane ending. And you're like, oh, we're going to just do that then?
Yeah.
Or, like, I mean, or It, where you're like, it's a giant spider? And that's how we're,
that's
like, gonna...
Honestly, I'm a little worried about It Part 2, the movie.
Me too.
Because I really feel like people are not going to enjoy it.
Well, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they have to do the spider, I guess. But also, it doesn't really make sense.
What about the child orgy?
Well, they're not going to do the child orgy.
I mean, they're going to do some version of that, no? They're going to... I guess they'll do some lame, like, bonding ceremony.
Yeah,
that's like...
in the original... I mean, they did the blood... the cutting their hands thing, but that's in the book as well.
Yeah.
But they... In the original script, there was the... Because I read one of the versions of the original script, like, Cary Fukunaga, because he was credited on the version, but he, like, wrote a very different original version that was much darker. There's this moment where they all kind of, like... Oh, it's Beverly, like... takes all of their faces in her hands and, like, looks at them really intently when they're lost down there, and you're like, okay, this is what we're getting instead of the orgy.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
They would never do, like, an actual child orgy. Thank God. I almost asked him about that, but it was just like too. He'd already talked about how he thought it was silly. People were so fixated on that, and I was like, you should admit that it was a bad
choice. It was just a really weird thing to write into that otherwise perfect book.
Yeah. But there's a lot, I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff in there, but that is especially bad. And I think that, like, he's written some really incredible female characters, and he's also, like, shown a lot of, like, lack of care for female characters over the years. So it's, you know, with, like, Dolores Claiborne, you're like, how do you write this? And then also, like, you know, write scenes like that where I feel like you have no regard for this character beyond, like, as a vessel for all the men around her.
Right. Well, and I think he would argue that's just what the characters wanted to do.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't him.
Right. Great. I don't know if I buy that.
So you went to Maine?
I went to Maine, yes. I went to Maine. I watched a lot of Stephen King movies while I was there. While
that's so
I walked
cool.
around Maine. It was awesome. I loved being there. It wasn't spooky. I was hoping it would be a little spooky, but it did feel very Stephen King.
Yeah.
And I do, like, think it's so cool that he, like, has made Maine such a, like...
It's amazing.
It's a Stephen King destination, you know? Like, I watching those movies, like, the ones that were actually, like, filmed there, or at least, like, try to look like they're filmed there.
Yeah.
You know, there's something cool that there's this, like, authenticity to it where you feel like it's capturing this, like, this very Stephen King vibe.
Totally.
And that Maine is that.
Yeah.
All of the, like watching Dolores Claiborne and then all that, you know, the lighthouse stuff, and then seeing all these lighthouses and being like, it was neat.
It's so cool. I did the in Bangor, they have, like, a Stephen King tour, which is the best thing that I've ever done. I actually did it on my birthday one year, and it was, like, the best birthday I've ever had. Oh, also, we have almost the same birthday. Happy birthday.
You too.
Congratulations on being a year older.
Thank you.
So we did that in Bangor, and it was awesome. It's like, you see, there's, like, the cemetery from Pet Sematary. There's, like, the store that inspired Randall Flagg's name. There's, like, the corner from Insomnia. Like, there's all this stuff that it's like, it looks exactly like it did in the book. But the coolest thing was we went to Lisbon Falls, which is what, I think Castle Rock is based on Lisbon Falls. But it's like, it looks exactly how, like, in Needful Things, when he's describing, like, the small town with the one main street and there's the mill, and it looks exactly like that. And it was like I was in a dream. It was so crazy.
Yeah.
I love that.
I want to go to Bangor really badly. I wanted to go to do the interview. I mean, he has a house somewhere else in Maine. I know that the Stephen King house is, like, there.
Right. He's got, like, a lake house or something.
Yeah, but he definitely spends a lot of time at the other one that's, like, not as famous.
Yeah.
But I want to go to Bangor. I feel like I have to do that at some point.
I feel like I have to disclose that I got engaged in front of his house in Bangor, which is really embarrassing. My husband, I didn't want that, but it's just, now that I look back, it was nice. But I'm glad you've been to Maine. It's really magical.
Yeah, I want to go back. I think about it all the time.
I know.
And
it's so great.
I almost did a set visit for Castle Rock. It didn't pan out, but I was trying to do it because it wasn't filmed in Maine. But I wanted to see how they would capture that town.
Yeah.
And I think the show did a decent job of capturing that. But, you know.
You should 100% go to Lisbon Falls. It's crazy.
Well, I will try.
Yeah. And they have a little they have a Moxie store there. You know Moxie?
Moxie.
It's like the state drink of Maine. It's sort of like a bad root beer.
Okay.
But it's really cute. And it's the Moxie store that is in 112263. Like there's all these cool things. It's like you can tell that he was sitting there looking at it while he wrote it. But I highly recommend
that's a book I didn't read. But I actually enjoyed the Hulu series.
I know. So that's one of my, I want to talk about my complaints with your list, which I know that you've heard from many other people.
No, by all means.
So 112263, I felt was unwatchable.
Really?
I thought James Franco was such a bad choice. I thought that Sadie was like way too like hot and one-sided. Like in the book, she's so like complicated and real.
Right.
And like, I guess I just can't forget that it's James Franco, but yeah. I just felt like all the acting was so flat. It just felt like it didn't.
I can see that. I think he was very restrained. Like yeah. James Franco was very, was doing a very like subtle thing and it worked for me, but I also get finding it a little bit like.
It's just like if I didn't know what the story was,
right.
I don't think I would have lasted more than a couple episodes.
Right. So I didn't read it. So I had nothing to base it on.
Right. So maybe it was more exciting if you don't know where it's going.
Yeah, because I thought actually like I was like, oh, this is cool. Like I like these time travel rules. Like it was very.
Yeah, because it's a great story.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was really cool.
That's fair. So I disagreed with that. I don't remember where you ranked the Green Mile, but I remember that you said that everyone was angry where you put
that
it.
That was that people were angriest about Green Mile, yeah.
It was like below 10 or something.
Oh, it was like, yeah, it's low. Like it's like mid-range.
The Green Mile, I think, honestly, is maybe my favorite movie, not even just Stephen King
really?
Movie.
Really? I don't know. I think it like...
Mr. Jingles didn't do it for you?
No. I mean, there are things I like about it, and like it makes me cry, but I just like it feels very of its time to me. Like it feels like very, and I think it's weird. Like the whole vibe of it is weird to me. Like watching that and like watching Shawshank and sort of just like the different, like sort of this like weirdly happy prison. Like it's death row, but like Tom Hanks is like super nice, and it just like I just didn't love that, and I think that you know the characters are messy. I don't know. It just it's very sweet.
And have you read the book?
I haven't.
The book, I will say, is much better. And I think that maybe I'm like biased watching the movie because I've read the book so many times. But like in the book, you get so much more of his first person narration about like Green Mile. Really, the book is about what it's like to grow old. And so it's like really a story about his life. And there's just these little like snippets of looking back at the prison. And I feel like that works better because he's sort of looking at everything through these rose-colored glasses because he's thinking about when he was young stuff. So I think like it works so much better.
And the movie is
the
from
book.
His perspective, so it is.
But like to a lesser extent, like I feel like you forget that there's like an old man talking about it.
Right.
But I see it. I just like nothing makes me cry more than that whole Mr. Jingles thing.
Oh, I mean, sure. Yeah, yeah.
I can't.
I can't really. But like the whole execution scene is like real rough.
Yeah.
We can move on.
Yeah.
But that was the one that people got mad about. Like were really mad about, and then. People were mad that I ranked The Mist so high.
Yeah, so let's talk about The Mist because I also don't like The Mist.
Great.
I loved The Mist until the ending.
Oh, the ending's the best part.
I know, but I'm one of those people that like if the ending of a movie is too upsetting, I just get mad and I can't enjoy the movie. So I think the movie was really well done.
Yeah.
I hate because they change the ending, you know. That's not actually what happens in the story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I prefer
Stephen King likes the ending.
I know.
And I think it's... It is a really upsetting ending. Like, it is one of the all-time most upsetting endings of a movie.
Right.
And I think
which
that
I
it's
guess
like,
does make the argument for, like, it's a really... It, like, sticks with you. Like, it's an effective movie.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I didn't like watching it again was the CGI.
Mm-hmm.
But I am anti-CGI almost always. And my biggest fear about the new Pet Sematary...
I know.
...is they're going to do CGI for Gage at the end. And I'm like, that's like a really big issue for me. I'm like... I want to see an actual, like, two-year-old with a scalpel.
Well, that's what was so scary about the original one.
Right.
Terrifying.
And, like, it's, you know, there are times when that baby looks fake. When he throws him against the wall, you're like, that's not a real child.
But that's not the scary part.
Right. No. And I just don't want a CGI version of that. I'm terrified.
Yeah.
And I think the parts of It that are the worst, the new
I know,
where the CGI,
overly CGI,
where I'm like, you know, you can do practical effects.
Well, and I think, like, that's worth mentioning because there's all these remakes happening with Stephen King movies, and now everything in the world is CGI. But, like, one of the things that made his original movies, so, like, Carrie and It and Pet Sematary and even Cujo so scary was that, like, it just looks like real life.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at the clown, like, Pennywise and It, the original one, it's fucking terrifying. It's just, like, a creepy man standing. Like, that's so much scarier than a CGI alien.
Right. Well, I think that, like, yeah, I mean, one of the worst things about the Carrie remake was the CGI. It was, like, when the blood falls and they show it from different angles.
Oh,
and it's,
no.
like, very clearly,
I haven't
like,
seen it.
You haven't seen the 2014 Carrie? Okay, so when the blood falls... You see it from all these different angles, and it's like very clearly like CGI blood falling down. And then when what's her name gets killed, you know, the mean girl whose name I'm not Sue, the other one.
I don't remember.
When she gets killed, like, Carrie stops her car and her head goes into the windshield and it's done in slow motion. And like this really, it's just like very silly. The thing that I could have written like many paragraphs about every one of those movies and I didn't because I wanted to.
I wish you would. I honestly
had
like
so many feelings.
I treasured, it took me probably like an hour to read that whole thing. Right. And I was sad when it was over. Cause I love anytime anyone else wants to talk about Stephen King, this level of detail, it makes me so happy.
I wrote it over. It took me a week to write.
I bet.
But I really like, and I'd taken so many notes that I really wanted to write more about all of them. I was just trying to like spare myself, my editor. But I thought the part about Carrie that made me uncomfortable about the new Carrie was that you're always kind of rooting for Carrie, but the new one, there's something about it that felt a little bit like, it was a little bit more gleeful in her destruction.
Yeah.
Where you were like, where she was like kind of brutally murdering these people and it felt like it was too much on her side. And at the end, there's this weird part where I guess it's Sue, she's the one who survives, right? Or maybe I'm making, whatever.
You Sue know, the, sounds right.
Right. The one who survives.
Yeah.
The one who survives is like, well, we kind of pushed her to it. So really it wasn't like her fault. And I'm like, just like in an era of like mass school shootings, like, can we not like kind of have this vibe of like, well, yeah, she massacred everyone, but like maybe we deserved it because we were mean to her. Like that's just like not a sentiment that I'm comfortable with. And I think that the way they did it with like the way they kind of relished that violence, it rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah.
But it's like Ansel Elgort's fun in it.
Yeah.
He dies. Tommy dies right away in the new movie version.
Really?
The bucket hits him on the head and he like he's killed instantly, which I think is like a hilarious choice.
Yeah, that is funny.
But I don't like it because then it's like she's kind of doing it out of revenge for him.
Yeah.
Which like, who cares?
Well, and this is the thing is I feel like that. So I haven't seen it, but I do feel like the way you're describing it, it feels like a product of right now, like revenge movies are so hot. Like people are so into that. And in, what was it? The early 70s when the original Carrie came out, like no one had ever done this before of like a normal person snapping and just like killing everyone in a gruesome way.
Right. I mean, the early 70s were kind of the advent of like the rape revenge genre. So you have like Last House on the Left. And
but those were people who like, who deserved it. Those were,
Carrie was who very much deserved it.
Right.
But Carrie, I mean, and Stephen King also wrote that book, Rage, which is like,
oh yeah,
out of print for good reason.
Very good reason. Don't read it.
Which is, have you read it?
Yeah.
Because I never bothered to try to find it.
So it's interesting as like a study in how fucked up things are. Like no one else would be brave enough to write that story. And I read it because I was like, oh, I love like fucked up stories. But it was really very difficult to get through, given the current climate.
Yeah, I don't think anyone needs to read it now.
Yeah,
but I think that like that sort of, he definitely has that like, that is a theme that he is exploring.
Yeah.
I think you're right about Carrie, that it kind of like, it hit that spot and like people had not seen that.
Right. And I think that if you're watching that now as like a teen and it's your first Stephen King movie that you're seeing, like it's like, it goes along with all the other horror movies that you're seeing out there, which aren't really horror. It's just like, here's a person who's going to get revenge by murdering everybody. Like I feel like every movie is like that now.
But in the original Carrie, you're really like, it's pretty brutal, but you're not, you definitely like want her to kill the bullies or like, you know, her main aggressors.
But
when she kind of kills everyone, including Betty Buckley, you're like, this is fucked up and she should be stopped.
Right.
So it's not, I mean, it's definitely like presented as horror. And I felt like the new Carrie was sort of like an action. Like,
exactly.
There was a little bit too much of like, of that going on.
I totally agree.
But I would say it's kind of interesting, worth watching. I would probably skip the early 2000s. TV movie version of Carrie.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Which, was supposed to be a backdoor pilot for a TV series in which Carrie goes on adventures helping telepathic kids.
Oh, boy. Well, have you read Dr. Sleep?
I have not read Dr. Sleep.
Do you know? So they're making a sequel to The Shining.
I know about
Dr. Sleep.
Right. I know that they're making a movie with Ewan
McGregor.
Do
you know, like, what it's about?
No, I think that... I don't remember. I've read about it, but I haven't...
So Dr. Sleep is like, I think this is going to be, people are going to be so excited about it because everyone loves The Shining.
But it's not nothing to do with that, right?
It has nothing to do with it. And Dr. Sleep, the book, is like one of the most ridiculous books I've ever read. It's Danny Torrance grown up.
Right.
And he essentially joins a band of people sort of like roving gypsies almost who like all have The Shining. And they travel the world trying to protect children with The Shining who are being like targeted by some evil corporation or evil presence or something. It's ridiculous. Like, right. I do not know how this is going to translate to a movie. And I know that everyone is going to go to it expecting to see another Shining, and they're going to be real mad.
Yeah, I think that they would have to... Well, they're probably going to market it that way because it's just like...
Right, it's like, why would anyone see it otherwise? Or they'll
throw in more Shining stuff.
Right, but then it's not going to... It's going to be so weird.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What is the organization? Is it like the shop or is it like a separate...
So it's like a weird... That was one of the problems I had because this just came out less than 10 years ago. It's like a relatively new book. I remember reading it and being mad that it doesn't have the connections I was expecting. It literally feels like he wanted to write a wacky book about gypsies with powers and just sort of put Danny Torrance in there. So it would make sense if it was the shop, but it's not. It's like some... I'm trying to remember exactly what it is. It's like some evil presence that can sense the Shining, but for no apparent reason, and they're just sort of evil. I don't know. It's one of those... It's not his best.
Right. Well, the Shining's always been kind of ill-defined for me. I'm still kind of trying to figure out what the Shining is.
Yeah.
And who has it.
Yeah. Well, it turns out that a lot of his characters have it, and sometimes he calls it the Shining, sometimes he calls it the Shine, and sometimes it's sort of implicit. Like in the Dark Tower, there's a couple characters that maybe have the Shine.
Right. And in the movie version, they do say that Jake has the Shine.
Right. And I'm not convinced that Jake has the Shine. I think that was a different situation, but there's another character that Roland hangs out with in the books. I think the girl, or there's somebody that he like interacts with that has it. I don't know, but
it's been a while since I read the Dark Tower series.
Yeah,
I would love to reread it. I would probably skip over Wizard and Glass's like 400 page flashback.
Yeah, I loved Wizard and Glass, but yeah, I could have lived without it being in the middle of the series.
It's just such a long flashback.
It's extremely long.
And you know
long.
Where it's going. Like, I get it, doomed love story.
Right.
And,
it doesn't
so much.
Add really anything to it the actual
nothing.
Story.
It adds nothing.
It sort of gives you for some context for why he's so mad, but like you didn't really wonder why he was mad in the
first
place.
Yeah. It's funny though that there was that much backstory in these books, and then like the movie was like 90 minutes.
I know.
Nothing made any sense. No one, like mythology was like so muddled. Like even someone who'd read all the books, I was like, I don't actually know what they're trying to do or why they're trying to do this or like...
Yeah.
Like, you know, Matthew McConaughey's like Walter was like, I guess Randall Flagg, but like it's sort of unclear, and he's killed so easily that but also Randall Flagg is killed really stupidly in the book, so there's that as well.
Yeah,
that was one of my least favorite Stephen King moments, was the death of Randall Flagg.
Yeah, so I think that overall The Dark Tower has a really amazing ending, like the epilogue of Dark Tower.
Yeah, no,
I think
I agree.
Is incredible, but like otherwise the ending is very sort of like confusing and disappointing. Doesn't he get well, I don't want to say any spoilers, but he gets killed by the...
Are we not spoiling? Do you try to avoid spoilers?
I don't in general, but I feel like Dark Tower is something that like it has such a good payoff.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I definitely spoil the epilogue, but I will say that people hate that ending. I think it's actually one of his best endings.
I totally
ever.
Agree.
But
it's difficult, but it's the right ending.
I did definitely like reading that book cry at every death
because
I was so attached to those characters.
Well,
and they just like, he just kills all of them. Sorry, this is super spoilery, but I mean, everyone dies and it's so sad.
Yeah. But that's the thing is Stephen King makes you care so much about every single one of those characters.
Right.
Also, you read like 8,000 pages about them, so you get pretty attached to them, but.
Yeah. No, I think that, that's the other thing. They're just so long. You read The Dark Tower for so long, you're so attached to those characters.
Yeah.
But like, how could you not, you know, love a Billy Bumbler?
I know. Oh my God, he's the best. Well, and I think that so I don't usually reread books, but the ending of The Dark Tower, for reasons I won't say, really makes you
want
to read the whole thing
again. Yeah, of course.
Even though it's so long. So I would
love to read it again. I don't read as much as I used to. I mostly do audiobooks and I mostly do nonfiction. So it's like The Outsider was crazy because I had to read it for that interview. And I got a copy, like a hard copy, and I just like sat and read it. And I was like, oh, this is like I used to. I remember like I was like home in bed. It was storming outside and I was like reading this book and I was like, this is kind of fun.
Yeah.
But I was like, also there are so many pages.
I know.
Like, what are we doing here? And I can't just like scroll down.
Yeah. It's tough.
Did you read The Outsider?
I haven't read it yet. I'm pretty behind on his new stuff.
Yeah. So I read that one. I got a copy of the new one. I think is it Elevation? Is that what it's called?
Yes. That sounds right.
And I read the back cover and it's a Castle Rock story.
Yeah.
And it's about someone who's losing weight and can't stop and can't figure out why. And I was like,
so
this sounds incredibly familiar to the point that I'm like, do you know you wrote this book already?
Right. Is it possible that he's forgetting the ones?
I don't know. I mean, I assume it goes in a different direction, but I was like, that's really funny because you famously wrote a story about this that was made into a film.
Do you know the whole thing about what is it from a Buick six, whatever it's called, from a Buick 68 or something?
Something from Buick something.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he did that because he was so disappointed with Christine that he wanted to like write the same plot again, but do it better.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I have not read that one.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm probably
sure it's
fine without.
Yeah, I think that's okay.
I read Cell, so you know.
Yeah, you've put in your work. Yeah. So here's my final complaint from your list.
Great.
Shawshank Redemption.
Yes.
Was number 6.
Yes.
I'm going to read through the 5 that came before it, and I want you to justify why you think those movies are better than Shawshank.
Okay.
Okay. So Shawshank is 6. Number 5 is Dolores Claiborne.
Okay.
Tell me why that's better than Shawshank.
Dolores Claiborne is a fantastic movie. I mean, they're all great movies, though. Okay, top 10, or at least, like, the top... Like, when you get to this point, it's all personal preference, yeah. Right? Like, Dolores Claiborne... I don't know. Shawshank Redemption is a great movie, and I think one of the hardest things about that movie is that it sort of has become, because it's such a great movie and because it's so influential,
yeah,
a bit of a cliche. Like, when you watch it now, it feels a little bit, like, like, it sort of set these cliches.
Right.
So you watch it
like, it feels overdone because you've seen other movies. Yeah.
And I tried to view it without, like, outside of that lens, having only ever seen it before in pieces on TV over the years. So to sit down and watch it now, it's still really good. It still makes me cry. I just think that, like, I felt more excited about Dolores Claiborne watching that, which I had seen before.
Yeah.
But it just, I don't know, it captured something that was, like, more interesting to me.
Yeah. I haven't seen Dolores Claiborne.
It's really good.
I hear it's really good. Okay. And then number 4, you've got Carrie.
Yes.
Which we talked about a little bit, but tell me why you think it's better than Shawshank.
Well, I mean, Carrie is just like, yeah. Well, this is funny. The other thing that I was having trouble with, this is not why Carrie is number 4, but I was really worried that all of my top choices were going to be like non-horror movies and that I was going to get like dragged because like Stephen King has like written plenty of like non-horror things and they're great, but I didn't want to be like, I take horror so seriously and I wanted to honor that. And I was really worried this would be like Stand By Me and Shawshank were going to be like the top 2 or whatever. No, I just think that Carrie is like, I mean, Carrie is such a great movie, like Stephen King aside, like it's just a great Brian De Palma movie. And I find it, I think it's like, I guess as a horror fan, like it's just like, it's so influential on the genre. Yeah. And like you were saying, it's sort of like a different kind of, this sort of like anti-hero where she's the protagonist but also the villain is like so fascinating to me.
Well, it's interesting too because I think you're right about Shawshank, like that concept has been done so many times in so many of those scenes. It's interesting that Carrie still feels so unique when you watch it now.
Yeah, I think a lot of that goes down to like the direction and that like Carrie is such a beautiful movie to watch.
Yeah.
And Shawshank is like very well filmed, but it's also like there's nothing it's not, I don't know, it's pretty straightforward. Like you watch it and you're like, this is a good movie. This is a really good movie. But Carrie is like, still has these like Brian De Palma moments that you're like, you know, these are so great. And what's crazy is like, when you watch the other versions of Carrie, they just copy his, they like, the scene of Carrie getting her period in the shower is literally always shot the same way to the point that I'm like, you guys know you could do a different version of this, right? Like, it's like, there's plenty of ways to film it, but they all know that he, like, got it right the first time.
But it's also, like, he definitely got it right, but Sissy Spacek is so hard to, you can't do any better than that. Like, her crazy eyes are, like, no one else gets that right.
And she also has the perfect look where she's, like, obviously beautiful, but can play plain, and, like, you believe she's bullied, whereas, like, Chloe Grace Moretz, you're like, no.
Right.
Yeah. This is not going to happen.
Exactly. Okay, I think you've convinced me that Carrie maybe deserves to be up there.
Okay.
All right, number 3 is Stand By Me.
Yes.
Why is that better than Shawshank? Because they're both sort of saccharine and...
They are. I don't know.
Stand By Me has been done so many times in
different movies.
It has,
but that's I think what impresses me about Stand By Me is that, like, it's so good in a way that, like, movies about kids growing up rarely are. Like, it's so hard to find those actors. I mean, frankly, the reason that I thought the new It was, like... I mean, if the new It as a horror film, I don't love.
Yeah.
But the kids are so good in that movie.
Good.
And their interactions are so real and, like, lived in that made me rank that movie higher. And Stand By Me is, like, kind of perfected that.
Yeah.
It is, like, this movie about nostalgia that should make you feel like this is a bit much. And yet it totally works.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just, I don't know, it's funny and it's sweet and it's smart and it's just, like, really moving. But again, this is a lot of, like, personal preference here.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you remember the scene in Shawshank where, I forget his name, but the old guy gets released from prison and he goes and he's wandering the streets in a suit that's too big and he doesn't feel at home and he just wants to go back to prison where he felt safe?
He says he wants to go back home.
Yeah.
And he kills himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awful.
Don't you think that's better than Stand By Me?
I mean, nothing's better than the pie vomit scene in Stand By Me.
Pie vomit scene?
You don't remember the scene where they're telling the story and
and they're like in the treehouse.
And they're at a pie eating contest and then and then
Oh, right. That is okay, fine.
That is a classic cinematic moment.
Fair. Okay, number two, The Shining, which Stephen King doesn't like, by the way.
I'm well aware. And I talked to him about it, like, I've now talked about it twice.
Yeah.
My thing about that is it's so fascinating is, like, I think his reasoning is so off. Like, his reasoning for why it's not a good movie is, like, his thing is, like, the book is, like, hot and it's fire and the movie is cold and it's ice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why is that a problem?
Yeah.
Like, The Shining is, like, and I'm not even a huge Kubrick person. Like, I've seen most of his movies and I'm pretty much, like, I don't get it. But The Shining, like, it's so evocative and it's so intensely creepy. And yeah. It just, like, there's, the visuals in that movie are so incredible. And watching the, like, the TV movie version of that or the miniseries, what was so rough is I'm trying to, like, have those similar moments. But, like, I'm sorry to Stephen King. An elevator of blood is so much, like, scarier, more effective than hedge animals moving toward you.
Oh, yeah.
CGI hedge animals. Yeah. It just doesn't work. And, like, I think that's an example of something he could write that does not work on screen. Yeah, I feel like that movie is all about the visuals. And I also think that, like, I don't know. It just, those performances are really great. I know that people, like, rag on Shelley Duvall, but I think she's, like, so perfect.
She's incredible in it, yeah.
And Jack Nicholson is, you know, at his best. And I don't know. It's a movie that's, like, that and Carrie are, like, they're classic horror films that have people have tried to replicate again and again, and they can never hit those heights.
Well, do you remember at the end of Shawshank when the one guy gets out of prison and he goes to that beach and you don't think he's going to see anyone there, but then he sees the other guy?
Oh, yeah. No,
and they're going to hang out forever on the beach?
Yeah. I fully cried. It was great. It was very moving. I still like The Shining more.
Okay, fine. All right. And number one is Misery.
Right.
Which I think you're probably right is better than Shawshank.
Misery is like it's just one of the greatest films of all time. It's so good. And I think that, like, what I really appreciated is, like, it's just, it's so dark and so funny and so, like, it just captures the best of Stephen King.
Yeah.
Where it's this, like, totally really agree. Silly, the concept just seems really, like, kind of, how would you pull this off? And it's so claustrophobic and it's so contained, but it works. And I think that also was, like, a lot of those adaptations, like, it's hard to imagine, like, how would this work on screen, and they often don't. And Misery, because it's such a small, you know, it feels like it works better as a stage play.
Yeah.
Even though the play was terrible. But you think, like, that makes more sense, because I can see this, like, a one-room play. But, God, that movie is, like, so suspenseful and scary, and it gave us the hobbling scene. They were smart to change it. I think it works better in the movie than it did in the book.
Yep.
The lawnmower shit they got rid of was also a good choice. I just love that movie.
Yeah.
I think it's so good.
I also
was glad to have number one that was a horror film.
Yeah.
Although The Shining was my number one for a while. And I was like, no, Misery is like a better movie.
And I think you're right that like Misery, I think, you know, for all my complaints about like a Stephen King book fan and what the movies do wrong, Misery is the one that I feel like exactly captures what I pictured and what I was thinking while I was reading the book. And it does such a good job of like, it shows the narration and the, sort of like, the background of the characters and how they interact with each other, which like, I really feel like people who are not Stephen King super fans, I think discredit him by not realizing that the thing he does well is not horror. Like that's not what he's the best at. The thing he's the best at is like character development and making things feel real. And I think Misery does such a good job of bringing that to the screen.
Yeah. And I think that like Misery is an example also of like a movie that works because of Stephen King.
Yeah.
Whereas The Shining works in spite of Stephen King.
Right.
The Shining movie has so little to do with Stephen King.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like Lawnmower Man insanity, but it's like
I was gonna ask you about Lawnmower Man. So I've never seen the movie.
Yeah,
I recently read Night Shift for the first time, and have you read the short story?
No, but I know what it's about and how it has nothing to do with.
And just for my listeners, Lawnmower Man, the story is about literally a guy who shows up to mow someone's lawn, and the guy looks out his window while the guy is mowing his lawn, and instead of mowing his lawn, the guy is totally naked and has turned into a fawn and is running around eating his grass with his mouth. And then he comes and murders him.
Right.
Terrible short story. And it was, they turned it into a feature length film that had nothing to do with the story.
Literally nothing to do with the story.
I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah.
How bad is the movie?
I mean, people like it, I think, from a nostalgia point of view of like they watched it in when it came out.
You gave it 55 out of 60.
Yeah. I think it's really bad. You can't get the regular version. You can only get the director's cut, which I hated. So it's also, the version I watched was very long. It was like probably 220 or something
Shut up.
But I mean, the thing about it is like, it's another main character. This isn't even Stephen King's fault. A character with a mental disability who like, it's like Flowers for Algernon or the movie Charlie, which is based on that. Like, it's like a story of like this guy suddenly like regaining his like cognitive functions and like getting smarter and
right.
also becoming a virtual reality god. And it's just really fucking weird and not like fun weird.
Right.
There are some like neat moments that like, I think that
I heard the virtual reality scene. Isn't there like they have sex in virtual reality
yeah,
or something?
Yeah. There's all that stuff where it's like fun as like a,
right.
a time capsule or like we imagine that this was like, this is what like, you know, high tech virtual reality technology would look like.
Right.
The thing that was so interesting is like they tried to make it a Stephen King movie by adding the shop in. So they talk about the shop a lot, but it really has no bearing on anything. And like, it was clearly wasn't a Stephen King story when they started
right.
out. And obviously he took his name off the movie. So I debated even including it and decided that it was worth it because people know what Lawnmower Man is,
yeah.
even though it has nothing to do with him.
And I'm really curious, like, how did you decide which ones to include and how did you go about ranking them? Like you said, you've done these kind of intense rankings before.
Yeah,
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, no, I watched chronologically. Because I wanted everything to be judged kind of like of its time.
Yeah.
So if you watch like a shitty like 80s miniseries and then watch like a 2017 movie, it's
right.
not really fair. So I tried to kind of like match them up.
Okay.
I watch everything. I take notes. I give a letter grade and I start to like sketch out at the bottom a ranking based on
okay.
letter grades. And then a lot of the work I do at the end is like saying like, that's when the personal preference comes in because I'm like, these are all like, you know, A-minus movies. These are all B-plus movies.
Right.
They're all like C movies. So you kind of just like flip things around based on like what you think is better than the other.
Yeah.
But doing letter grades, like that gives me like a rough idea of where everything falls.
Yeah.
I included all the movies. All that were in theaters. I included all the TV movies. I did miniseries and limited series, which was tricky because like Nightmares and Dreamscapes, which I included, was like a hard one because
yeah.
it was unclear if they ever intended to make more of those, but it seems like they wanted to do it as like an 8-episode anthology, which I was like, that counts to me as like that is basically
yeah.
a mini series based on his short stories.
There
were certainly ones like things like Castle Rock I couldn't include, Mr. Mercedes, Under the Dome, like things that had more than one season, The Dead Zone. I'm like not
yeah.
gonna watch the entire series. Haven, which I watched a lot of for some reason on Sci-Fi. There were like other shows I didn't include because of that.
Yeah.
And I didn't include anything that he wrote that was not based on something else. So he's written movies that are not based on stories. They're just
right. yeah, yeah.
his movies.
You didn't include those.
I did not include
right.
those because it was just too much.
Yeah. And so if someone came to you and was like, I've never read a Stephen King book or seen a Stephen King movie.
Right.
What one work, book or movie would you recommend that they start with?
God, that's like so tough because I feel like it like depends on the person. Because like I usually, like, I'm like, you should read The Dark Tower, but like I would not tell everyone to try like read all the
Dark
Tower.
Let's say you're on stage and there's 100 people in the audience,
right?
And the question is, what should we collectively read?
Oh,
like what would work on most people?
I mean, this is so tough. Like I feel like Pet Sematary is so scary, and
yeah.
like that's usually if you want to read like a scary Stephen King book, like Pet Sematary is like it's a really solid story. It's very straightforward, and it like works really well. And it's like fucked up and creepy. And like, I really liked it a lot. And it's like, I think it captures that like he is good at writing like horror.
Real horror, yeah.
Something like Misery, like it's weird to read that book because there's all those like romance novel parts of it that
yeah.
people might totally hate.
Yeah.
And the books that I like are kind of the weird ones or they're really long. Like it is, you know, it was my favorite forever before I read the Dark Tower series.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to recommend a book that's like 1,000 pages. Or there's a ton of weird shit happening that, you know, may or may not have any bearing on the plot.
Right.
How do you recommend that? I don't know.
I always recommend it. And everyone's like, I'm not going to read that.
Right. So, yeah. So I feel like Pet Sematary feels like a safer bet.
Yeah.
I don't think The Shining is great, but like I enjoyed reading The Shining.
Yeah.
And I think that like it's pretty also accessible Stephen King from what I remember. And yeah. And movie wise, I think Misery is a good like
mm-hmm.
entryway based on what we talked about, because I think it really does capture his style and his sense of humor. And it's also creepy and fucked up.
Yeah.
So
I'm definitely going to watch Dolores Claiborne. I feel like that was the biggest takeaway that I got from your, like, there's so many here that I'm like, I don't need to ever watch that. But Dolores Claiborne, I really feel weird that I haven't seen it yet.
Have you seen Gerald's Game?
Yes.
Yeah. So I thought that was cool too, because Gerald's Game obviously and Dolores Claiborne are linked, and they have this
yeah.
like, there's this weird psychic link they have. And I love that in the movie version of Dolores Claiborne, they acknowledge that, or sorry, of
Gerald's
Game.
Yeah.
They acknowledge that. They have a Dark Tower reference. Like they,
yeah,
that movie felt like it was what I wanted from a Stephen King movie, which is like acknowledge you're part of this universe, this multiverse, and like give me that.
Well, and this is, because that was Mike Flanagan, right? Directed it. And I feel like he's sort of the new, who's the one guy who directed most of the movies?
Mick Garris.
Right. I feel like Mike Flanagan is the new Mick Garris, where like he's a Stephen King super fan. He's starting to direct all these movies. And I think he does a great job of like sticking those connections in there in a way that feels really natural.
Yeah, he's doing some really good stuff. He has a new show on Netflix, The Haunting of Hill House is him.
Oh, that's him?
Yeah.
So I had no idea. Yeah, I heard that's amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. I've only watched the first couple episodes, but it's really scary and really good. And I think that he just is like a great director.
Yeah, I've liked
his movies a lot. I think like Oculus was good. He's a good director. Yeah. Even his Ouija movie was good.
Yeah.
It was fine, but it was like better than the first one. So I'll give him that. I think he's a good Stephen King director.
Yeah,
I want to see more of what he does. I don't want to see more Akiva Goldsman scripts because he's doing Firestarter and I don't understand why.
Yeah.
Because that is not like, that movie is bad. Like that movie is not good.
Yeah.
And I don't really want to see his take on it.
Right. It also doesn't really need to be remade. Like it's not a great story.
No, it's, I think it's like very much, I mean, watching it, I was like, I hadn't read it.
Yeah.
It's weirdly like basically the plot of Carrie. Like it's just about like someone with like powers who's kind of like pushed to her limits and then
it's
kills
sort
everyone.
Of a mix between like Carrie and Children of the Corn.
Yeah.
And both of those are great on their own. They don't really need a.
Yeah. I actually did not like Children of the Corn. Having
the movie.
Yeah. Or the remake, which, or the more recent version.
Yeah. Have you read the story?
Mm-mm.
The story is super good and super scary.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I haven't read enough of his short stories. I read the more recent collections. Like, I read Everything's Eventual.
Oh, I loved that one.
Which was a great collection.
Really good.
There are some of those were adapted into Nightmares and Dreamscapes, which was cool. I haven't read the early short story collections.
Yeah.
Which
if you're
going
to read one, I would highly recommend Night Shift, which is, I think that's the first collection that he had. And so many of the stories in there are either like really good or really weird or really iconic.
Yeah.
And there's like a million because they're all really short. It's really good.
I will pick it up.
Great. Last question for you.
Okay.
If any of my listeners ever meet Stephen King, what should they expect?
Oh, I think that he's, I've never met him in that context, like a fan context. But I think he would be very, nice and normal and maybe a little off-putting because he's kind of a weirdo.
Yeah.
Like he's just like a little,
he's
a writer and he's like a, you know, a big kind of weird dude.
Well, he's also like, when I saw him in person, he's now just become fully like he's embracing the weird old man thing.
Yeah.
Which I find really cute.
Right.
But it's not what I expected.
Yeah. No. He's just like, he's a little bit of a weirdo.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, meeting him was really cool. And I even though like he may not have loved me, I do not regret the experience and think that it was really, I'm glad that I got to do that.
Yeah.
That was like definitely amazing. A bucket list thing.
Yeah. Well, Lewis, thank you so much for coming
to
my podcast.
Me.
We've been wanting to do this for so long, and I'm glad we finally made it happen.
We've rescheduled
we've
many times.
For a long time. I know. I think
here.
You wrote this like 3 months ago, and ever since then, we've been trying to schedule this, but I'm so glad we made
did
it happen.
It. Me too.
And in the future, if you read a Stephen King book or watch a movie and want to talk about it, this is a great place to do it.
I will hit you up.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
You will find the Dairy Connection, and we can party. Like it's 6/19/99.